26. In the police station at Popanjee, two Aboriginal girls in dirty floral dresses were standing before the counter, swearing oaths before the officer in charge. They needed his official stamp before they could sign on for welfare. They had interrupted his weight training session. He took the hand of the taller girl and pressed it on the Bible.
"Right," he said, "now repeat what I say after me. I, Rosie."
"I, Rosie."
"Swear by Almighty God."
"Swear by Almighty God."
"That'll do," he said. "Now it's your turn, Myrtle."
The policeman reached for the other girl's hand, but she cringed and whipped it from his grasp.
"Come on, sweetheart," he said in a wheedling voice. "No need to act the giddy goat."
"Oh, come on, Myrtle," said her sister. But Myrtle shook her head vigorously and locked her hands behind her back. Rosie then gently uncurled her sister's forefinger and tugged it towards the binding.
"Aye, Myrtle," said the policeman.
"Aye, Myrtle," she repeated, as though the words were going to choke her.
"Okay," he said, "that'll do for you."
He stamped their application forms and scrawled a signature across each. On the wall behind there were pictures of the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh. Myrtle sucked her thumb and stared, bug-eyed, at the Queen's diamonds.
"Now, what do you want?" he asked.
"Nothing," said Rosie for her sister. The girls skipped away, past the flagstaff and across the rain-sodden lawn. It had been raining all day. They splashed on through puddles towards a gang of boys booting at a football. The policeman was short, scarlet in the face, with stumpy legs and almost unbelievable muscles. He was dripping with sweat, and his carroty curls were flattened onto his forehead. He wore short, ice-blue leotards, with a satiny sheen. His pectoral muscles were so heftily developed that the shoulder straps had bunched into the cleavage, leaving his nipples bare.
"Hello there, Ark," he said.
"Red," said Arkady.
"I want you to meet my friend Bruce."
"Pleased to meet you, Bruce," said Red.
We were standing behind the plate glass window looking out at the blank horizon. Water lay in sheets on the ground, flooding several Aboriginal humpies to the depth of a foot or more. The owners had heaped their gear onto the roofs. The water was awash with refuse. A short way off to the west was the old administrator's house, of two stories, which had since been given over to the community. The roof was still on, and there were floors and fireplaces, but the walls, the window sashes, and the staircase had all been burnt for firewood. We looked through this X-ray house into the yellow sunset. On both upper and lower floors sat a ring of dark figures, warming themselves over a smoky fire.
"They don't give a fuck for walls," said Red, "but they do like a roof for the rain."
Arkady told him we were on our way to Cullen.
"A little dispute between Titus and the Amadeus mob."
"Yes," Red nodded, "I heard about that."
"Who's Titus?" I asked.
"You'll see," said Arkady, "you'll see." "I'll be out that way myself next week," Red said. "Gotta go and look for the grader."
Clarence Chapeljarai, the chairman at Cullen, had borrowed the Popanjee grading machine to make a road for the settlement to a soakage.
"That was 9 months ago," Red said. "Now the fucker says he's lost it."
"Lost a grader?" Arkady laughed. "For Christ's sakes, you can't lose a grader."
"Well, if anyone's going to lose a grader," said Red, "it'll be Clarence."
Arkady asked what the road was like up ahead. Red toyed with the buckle of his security belt.
"You'll be all right," he said. "Stumpy Jones nearly got bogged in the big storm Thursday. But Rolf and Wendy went through yesterday and they radioed this morning they'd arrived."
He was shifting uneasily from foot to foot. You could tell he was aching to get back to his weights.
"Just one thing," said Arkady. "You haven't seen old Stan Chakamara? I thought we'd take him along. He's on quite good terms with Titus."
"I think Stan's gone walkabout," Red said. "They've been initiating all week. It's been a right mess, I can tell you. You ask Lydia."
Lydia was one of two schoolteachers stationed here. We had radioed a message for her to expect us.
"See you in a while," Red said. "She's cooking tonight."
The police post at Popanjee was a low concrete building divided into three equal parts: a public office, the officer's private quarters, and the room Red used for weight training. In the yard at the back there was a jail. The weight training room had a wall-to-wall window, and the weights themselves were the same electric blue as Red's leotards. We watched him enter. He lay down on the bench press and gripped the bar. a small boy whistled to his mates who dropped their football and rushed, naked, to the window, yelling and making funny faces and pressing their noses to the glass.
"One of the sights of the territory," said Arcady.
"I'll say," I said.
"Not a bad bloke, Red," he said. "Likes a bit of discipline. Speaks a rander and pintupi like a native. Bit of a nutcase, really. I'll give you one guess what his favourite book is."
I hate to think.
"Guess."
"Pumping Iron," I said.
"Way off."
"Tell me."
"The Ethics of Spinoza."